wanna say goodbye.
Monday to Friday, 2:30 to 4. It is the Blitz, AM 1450 KATE. Mitch Widmeyer locked in here with you until 4 o'clock this afternoon. We hit the phone lines once again. Always enjoy our time with Brandon Warren. He comes on just about every Friday, covers the Twins for Zone Coverage. You can find his work through that outlet at zonecoverage.com. Click on the Twins tab at the top of the page. Brandon, as always, we appreciate the time. I wanted to start where we started last week, but it was a preview. Now I want to look back. Your read it all day that you were having on Twitter seemed massive looking back on it. How often were you cranking out tweets with links to stories, and what sort of feedback did you get?
So I actually scheduled them on TweetDeck to make it a little easier, but it was every 10 minutes from 8 a.m. until almost 11 p.m. That's how well received it was. And as far as feedback, I looked at impressions and all that kind of stuff. There was over 1,000 links clicked in the day of and the day after, and about 270,000 impressions on Twitter. So I think it was pretty successful. Hopefully the next one will be better, and we'll see how often we do them, because first of all, it was a lot of work, but second of all, I feel like it was worth it. So we'll see what happens, but I really enjoyed it.
And I guess I should have prefaced by saying, for those who missed your segment on this show last week, I think you worded it as such, correct me if I'm wrong, something like, in light of the letting goes of Jason Stark at ESPN, Ken Rosenthal at Fox Sports with his writing and Jason Stark's writing, you wanted to shed some light on some on whether they're young or middle-aged, whatever, a journalist, and wherever they're at with their career, you wanted to put light onto them, and so you let any writer possible send you a story that you were going to post on Twitter. And if you just said it, like I think you said it, every 10 minutes, right, from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m., you were tweeting out links?
Yep. So I scheduled, I think it was 120-some posts, and that was, it took me two full nights of sitting down for at least an hour scheduling them and curating them and getting people's Twitter handles and lining everything up. So, again, a lot of work, but I would say it was worth it. So I don't have any regrets, and I think a lot of people got their stuff read that might not have otherwise, and that's the goal, you know, is, I don't think people realize how talented some of the lesser-known writers are in the world, or especially in America these days. And it's important to me that craft continues. So I think it was a very successful day overall.
I don't want to shove words or spoon-feed them into your mouth, but you make it sound as though this wasn't a one-time ordeal, that you would bark up that tree again in the future because it appeared to be a hit, correct?
Yeah, I don't know how often, whether it would be yearly or every couple months or quarterly. But we'll see what people say. I'll probably put out the feelers again around Christmas time and see what people want to do. And again, I want it to be for the people. It's not about me. And I try to use just what I have considered a modest platform to help people out. And I don't know. We'll see what happens. But I definitely do plan to do it again.
You can find his work at zonecoverage.com. Click the Twins tab at the top of the page. Always enjoy our time with him. He is Brandon Warren. All right, Adalberto Mejia last night for the Twinkies, Brandon. He had a very Adalberto-type start. I've told you before, I like his stuff. I like what he brings to the table, but he has to figure out a way to limit his pitch count. It's frustrating to watch sometimes, although if you want to be glass half full about it, to me, if that's one of the biggest issues with him or one of the biggest ones, I think it's fixable in the future.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing that you can wait on in the future, but at the same time, too, it's distressing when the Twins need everyone they can get that he's only giving them 3-4, sometimes 5 innings, but with 100-110 pitches. It's just not effective pitch economy, and it's just really distressing on a bullpen that already is sagging and is already missing also Brandon Kinsler now that he's been traded. And Dylan G looked, I thought, quite good, but you know, you don't want to chew up through your long guy and then have other starters coming up that might need that help, whether it's Kyle Gibson on Saturday or anybody else. I mean, Santana and Barrios are pretty much your sturdy guys, and then everyone else, you never really know what you're going to get. So it's a matter of him really understanding and trusting how good his stuff is. And two, the other thing that I think was a bit disappointing was he had Carlos Gomez down 0-2 and then kind of fiddled around with him, ended up walking him, and then gave up the home run to Gallo. And I mean, I understand maybe not wanting to attack Gomez with anything too good because of the lefty-righty matchup, especially with Gallo being lefty-lefty. But Gallo's been red hot. He's almost at 30 home runs on the season. And that ended up being pretty much the pivotal runs of the night. So, again, it's easy for me to question that in hindsight, but I want to caution people and say that, you know, in the moment, I'm just thinking, man, you can't mess around with Gomez here. Go get Gomez and, like, Gallo lead off an inning with runners on, or at least then you can feel good about attacking Gomez if Gomez beats you, because Gallo is just so good and so powerful. And we saw it. Buxton looked up at that home run. He barely even moved. That's how far out of target field it was hit. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of talent here, and I think there's an iffy approach that'll get better. But I do still believe in Adalberto Mejia moving forward to be a pretty darn good starter.
You just brought up a lot of points that I want to touch base on. Let's start with the bullpen, where it's where you started, and Dylan G was a name you brought up. I thought he looked solid in three innings of relief last night. Will he stay the long guy? Do you want him to stay in the bullpen? I can't imagine, like, long term. I know there's only 2 months left in the season, but he probably envisions himself as a starter. But do you think the Twins just roll with him as one of the long guys out of the bullpen?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's what he envisions himself as, and then there's also him realizing that he'd rather be in the big leagues than not. So I think he's probably willing to do whatever role they give him. And at the same time, too, with him stretched out like this, they can keep Kyle Gibson on a pretty short leash if he struggles on Saturday in his start, because he's going to come back. And, I mean, Gibson dominated AAA Rochester like you would hope a guy who's 29 years old would. I mean, he dominated AAA 3 years ago when that was his regular stomping ground. So that Gibson went down there and took care of business is not surprising. But to have G is a good thing, too. And I think he'd obviously rather be starting. But who knows? Maybe if he pitches well in August, he'll get flipped to a team that can use him as a swing man as well. So August is going to be intriguing for that kind of thing, and I'm sure G would rather be starting. But just getting the baseball in the big leagues and getting that paycheck is certainly better than not.
I love when you lead the dialogue and you just let me ask you questions, because you brought up before, too, Joey Gallo. And I'm curious, because I'm familiar with the name. I've seen him play a handful of games. Obviously, we don't see too much of the Rangers outside of them playing the Twins. But, like, what is Joey Gallo? He had the three-run bomb last night. At the beginning of the year, I know the one gripe with him coming out of Texas was he either hits a home run or he gets out. Like, he wasn't getting on base that much. I believe his batting average is still around 200, but he's nearing 30 home runs, has over 50 RBIs. Like, how good is Joey Gallo? Like, what is he?
I think his future is something like Adam Dunn, hopefully. You know, maybe take some walks. Maybe a little more defensive value, because when Adrian Beltre was down, he was playing third base. He's got a really good arm. If they have to move him to the outfield, he could probably provide some value there as well. But with the Rangers kind of turning things around, they still got enough young players, and Nomar Mazara and Elvis Andrews isn't too old, that they could probably do a retool rather than a rebuild. And I think that Gallo and Mazara are kind of the big guys there. So whether he plays first base, third base, or the outfield, you're looking at a low average, lots of strikeouts, but lots of power guy that, you know, can have value in the modern day major leagues, especially if he takes his walks. And I think the walks are going to be the difference between him being a liability and an asset, which is, it's a pretty narrow line, because, you know, you have to be dependent on the pitchers to give you those walks. But with power like that, he's going to command enough respect to where teams will pitch him or pitch around him at times as well. So when he's hitting 200, it's probably less likely. But if he can bump it up to 230, 240, you're probably looking at a guy that could hit 40, 50 home runs year in and year out.
Plenty of Twins talk this afternoon with the one, the only, Brandon Warren here on the Blitz. What to you, Brandon, are the biggest issues with the Twins the last week plus, if I narrow it down to that time frame? Because I gave them a slight hall pass at the start of the second half, because they faced Houston, the Yankees, and the Dodgers. Now they lose a series to Oakland. They split two games with San Diego, and they lose game one to Texas. And when I'm watching them, they just, it's not lazy. They just seem kind of sluggish when I'm watching them lately.
Yeah, almost like they're disoriented coming from the West Coast or something. And I talked to Matt Belisle, and he said the nice thing about playing in the Central time zone is that you don't have those crazy time swings, but you do have some adjusting when you've been over, you know, two time zones away for well over a week. I kind of gave him the benefit of the doubt with that tough stretch as well. And you know, obviously it's difficult sequencing to play all those tough teams at the same time, but that's when their playoff odds really took a hit, and they went from like 20-25% to about 3-5% to make the postseason. And granted, the Dodgers series is probably not fair to judge them on, and they probably should have won 2 of 3 or at least grabbed one of those wins. But you really got to take care of business against San Diego, who is one of the worst teams in the National League. Oakland has one of the worst records in the American League, if not the worst. And to lose that series and split with San Diego and be off on the wrong foot against a Rangers team that's pretty much buried, you know, that doesn't send a good message. As much as these guys might be distressed about the fact that they didn't buy at the deadline, look at this team and tell me it's not pretty much the same team that was over 500 at the break. I don't think you can do that. Again, Brandon Kinstler obviously helped his team a lot. A pitcher like Brandon Kinstler is not the difference between contending and not. It's the difference between maybe closing out a few more games. But you've got guys that can do that too. So if guys are sulking, that would be really disappointing. I think it's just a stretch in the middle of the season where guys are kind of trying to get their legs back under them and catch that second wind. And hopefully they'll start playing better here at home, which has been obviously a struggle all season long. So I'm not willing to say that they're not putting out full effort or anything like that, but I do agree with the assessment. They've looked sluggish or just a little bit off, and so I don't know if they need, you know, maybe an afternoon off from extra BP or something to kind of recharge those batteries. But, you know, we'll see what Paul Molitor and company have in store.
Who are you watching for in these last two or so months that you're really hoping steps up, needs to step up to sort of put your mind at ease heading into the offseason?
I mean, I think some of the younger guys, you know, Max Kepler has been up and down, has struggled against left-handers especially. I'd like to see him take a step ahead of last year. And there were stretches where he has and hasn't. But if his season numbers this year are the same as last year, I still won't be all that discouraged just because he's so young. But it would be nice to see a step forward there. Byron Buxton was so hot before the injury that put him on the disabled list. It would be nice to see him pick that up, get that on-base percentage over 300 or maybe even 315, 320 to end the season. That would be obviously good to pair with his plus defense. And then I really need to see something out of Jorge Polanco. I mean, I know he's not going anywhere, and he's still a young guy that's going through a lot both personally and professionally, but it's really been a rough stretch for him now the last couple months, and you really need to see him turn a corner unless they end up deciding to do something else at shortstop. And he needs to prove that he's the answer rather than just another question mark. So I think those are the three guys for me. Again, Jose Berríos, too, obviously with the long rigors of a regular season, especially since it's longer than the minor league season, and this is going to be kind of his first stretch run in the big leagues. He's been so good, but he's had a couple hiccups here recently. I'd like to see him catch his second wind and really chase Ervin Santana for the crown of ace on this rotation.
Brandon Warren with us this afternoon on AM 1450 KATE. It is the Blitz. We have not talked post-trade deadline. The Twins dealt away Jaime Garcia and Brandon Kinstler. It seemed to make all the sense in the world to deal Kinstler, who's 32, a free agent to be, and who has his stock at a place that, to me, Brandon, will never be higher. Did the move make sense to you as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not because Kinstler's not a good guy or a good closer or a good pitcher. It's just a matter of moving him at the time when, you know, free agency's coming up. They get a guy who's 20 that might have some projection left. And honestly, if they really, really want to, they could approach Kinstler in the offseason about coming back. And so it just made a lot of sense to let him go off, chase a pennant in his last year before his first free agency payday. And it just, you know, they did well by Kinstler at the same time as doing well by themselves. And I just think it was the best for all parties involved. And again, if the Twins were to turn around and get back to 500 and stay in the mix in August and September, they have guys who can fill that ninth inning role, whether it's Trevor Hildenberger or if they go back and forth based on matchups with Taylor Rogers and Matt Belisle. But it's just when you take a reliever like that out of the bullpen and have to replace him with someone who wasn't in what was already a bad bullpen, that's where you kind of see the drop-off. So I understand why fans are upset, but it's not a foundational kind of player that they moved. It was a complimentary piece that another team needed more than you do. So the move made total sense to me.
What do we know about the dude the Twins got in return outside of the fact that he's a 20-year-old left-handed pitching prospect? I'm assuming you've done your due diligence.
Yeah, I think pretty good feel, 89 to 92. Just a good size, you know, size guy as far as future potential and what he can bring. If he can add a couple ticks, you're up 92, 93. I think the profile, they believe, with his delivery is a little fringy for maintaining his command. So that might be the difference between him being a number three starter and a number five starter. But the hope is that, you know, he'll look like a, you know, he'll make it through the big leagues eventually here. He was an all-star, I believe, in the Sally League and then again, or before that, in the Penn League. So he's obviously been very impressive early on. And July has been really rough for him. I believe he's got like a 7 ERA this month, but before that, his season ERA was like 3.5, more than a strikeout per inning. So as far as results are concerned, he's been very, very good. And so that's the kind of guy you want to target as a lottery ticket, so to speak, in a trade like this.
We'll finish up with a couple of points. I'm curious. I want to know, who was your biggest trade deadline winner, and who do you think on the flip side made maybe a questionable choice or two, or maybe didn't do anything at the deadline you thought they would?
Well, on the loser side, I mean, I just don't understand what the Baltimore Orioles are doing, going out and getting Jeremy Hellickson and Tim Beckham. They're not going to contend, and they traded. I mean, they didn't really trade much, but it just the moves didn't make any sense. And Milwaukee, too. I mean, as much as they may or may not contend this year, they went out and got two relievers, which doesn't make any sense to me, because Anthony Swarzak, who Twins fans are familiar with, is, you know, he's not going to be around after this year. And if they're not contending, I just don't understand trading something for him. So those are kind of the two teams I really wasn't really fond of their moves. I think the Yankees obviously have to be considered a win, not only for their trade for Sonny Gray, who should be able to really handle Yankee Stadium well with his ground ball stuff, but they really locked down that bullpen with Tommy Kahnle and David Robertson. Todd Frazier's interesting. You know, they didn't have to trade any of their core prospects, their Fraziers, their Torreses, or any of their really top-end pitching prospects. And Jaime Garcia is not a bad get either. And then you definitely can't sleep on the Cubs getting Quintana or the Yu Darvish trade for the Dodgers. The Cubs paid a lot more, but they also got a better pitcher that's very, very cheap for the next few seasons, whereas Darvish is a rental. But I think anybody who went all in at this deadline, J.D. Martinez going to the Diamondbacks, those are the kind of trades that teams really, really did well in this July.
I'm glad you brought up the Cubs, not only because I am a Cubs fan, but I wanted to pick your brain on this. So they went out and they got Jose Quintana, a left-handed starting pitcher. Then they go out and they get Justin Wilson, who's a left-handed reliever coming over from Detroit. And I'm wondering if maybe I'm looking too much into it, but are they envisioning a series with the Dodgers? And so they go out and they get a lefty starter and a lefty reliever, knowing that they have Seager and Bellinger. And when Adrian Gonzalez comes back, who knows where he fits in, and Jock Peterson. And they've got so many left-handed bats in their lineup that the Cubs sort of targeted that going into the playoffs if they were to win the Central.
No, I think that's probably part of it, is that you do want to be able to combat those. And it helps to have John Lester as well. You see what Jake Arrieta can do. He's been up and down this year, but to have left-handed pitching if you have to take on the Dodgers is the way to go. And again, they can blow people away with some of their bullpen guys as well. And I just think it's good to have a little bit of this and that on both sides of the plate. And so, yeah, I think that as much as it might seem kind of far-fetched to believe that, I do think they have that in mind, that they want to be able to shut lefties down in the postseason. And, man, Justin Wilson is really, really good. So I think that was just a magnificent trade for the Cubs. I mean, Candelario is an interesting prospect that the Tigers are going to get a good look at, probably at third base. But if you're the Cubs, you do that deal all day long and get Alex Avila, too, who's been just awesome this season.
We'll leave on this, go back to the American League, because you brought up Baltimore and the moves they made puzzled you a little bit, because you still don't see them contending after going out and acquiring the pieces that they did from a couple of different teams. If I had you try to just like predict the American League playoff teams this year, if I just threw out who like right now is leading, it's Boston, New York, Cleveland, Kansas City, and Houston. Outside of that, who do you think could sneak in? Is it a Tampa Bay or a Seattle, or do you like the teams that I named?
I like Tampa Bay's offense a lot. They really crush the baseball, and they always seem to pitch well. They always seem to kind of put pieces together to get you through games. And Jacob Feria, I don't know how you say his name. He's been really great for them as a rookie. It's like they have a factory, and they just pump out really good pitchers that are just out of relative obscurity. So if anybody's going to jump in the mix, it might be Tampa, and I think they could knock Kansas City out. But you know what? Kansas City did a good job, too, going out and shoring up their bullpen and getting some help there, getting Trevor Cahill for the back end of their rotation. They know it's their last hurrah. With Kane and Hosmer and Moustakas all free agents at the end of the year, they went all in too, and I think you got to respect that.
Find his work, zonecoverage.com. Again, zonecoverage.com. Click the Twins tab at the top of the page. Brandon, as always, it's a pleasure. Thank you for the time.
Yes, you bet.
That'll do it for the Blitz today. Thanks to Jim Sonnis and Brandon Warren for hopping on. We've got Twins baseball tonight, a 7:10 first pitch and a 6:30 pregame. Game 2 against the Rangers, folks. Be safe. Have a good weekend. We'll see you Monday for the Blitz.